Welcome to the Talk Theater in Chicago podcast, your audio source for what's going on in the Chicago theater scene. This is the episode for November 17th, 2008, and on this episode we have an interview with Nathaniel Swift from Eclipse Theater. Also, we have Chicago's theater news for you, so get ready, Chicago. And let's talk theater.
Hello, this is Tom Williams, and you are listening to Talk Theater in Chicago's interview podcast. Our guest this week is Nathaniel Swift, who is the artistic director at Eclipse Theater, and he is the director of the Lillian Hellman, The Autumn Garden. Hello, Nathaniel.
Hello, Tom. Thanks for having me.
Great. Tell us about the Celebration Series, Part 1, which this Lillian Hellman show is about. You know, how you arrived at doing this play.
Yeah, absolutely. Eclipse Theater Company has been, since 1997, working on the mission statement of one playwright, one season. And so for 10 years, we've been the only theater company in the Midwest to do that, to spend each season focused exclusively on a single playwright. And we got to the end of 10 playwrights and thought it was I wanted to take the opportunity to mark the milestone with a celebration of all 10 of those playwrights that we had featured over the years. And so this season that we're currently in the midst of is the first part of that, the Celebration Series Part 1, that's exploring, going deeper into those featured playwrights. Lillian Hellman in the upcoming production of The Autumn Garden. Earlier this season, we also featured Neil Simon, who is our 2003 featured playwright, with a production of Plaza Suite, and Tennessee Williams, who was our 1999 featured playwright. We produced in the spring Candles to the Sun, which was the first play that he had ever written as a college student. And next year, the Celebration Series continues with Part 2. Rebecca Gilman, Pearl Clegg, John Guare, Keith Redeen, and I'm forgetting someone, aren't I? Romulus Linney will make up the five playwrights that we'll be re-examining and re-exploring next season.
That's actually a brilliant idea.
Thanks.
Because I mean, look at the quality. I mean, you talk about top writers.
We go through a process each season, and we've done it for 10 years now of deciding who our playwright is going to be for that season, and it's something that all of the ensemble gets involved in, has an artistic stake in, and so the result is that we get playwrights who are sometimes playwrights that we've heard of, sometimes not at the beginning of the process, but very strong playwrights with a very strong body of work. And then we've had the process of a full year-long, you know, journey of exploring those playwrights. So to be able to come back to them at this point with that context, with that experience, and share it with our audiences, it's been a lot of fun for us so far.
Yeah, and what a lot of people do realize, one of the brilliance of that is that it's kind of built-in marketing. Because they, like Tennessee Williams, they've seen, they know all these people, and they go, oh, here's another one.
Yeah, and certainly, you know, we've seen it with I think with Plaza Suite most clearly. He was our Neil Simon was our 2003 featured playwright, so fairly recently. That was our first year at the Victory Gardens Theater, which is now the Greenhouse Theater, and so we've had a lot of people during Plaza Suite who, you know, had been a part of that 2003 season because they're big fans of Neil Simon, and so came back again to see us.
By the way,
Let
me congratulate you on that. That was a tremendous production.
Oh, thank you very much.
Very, very funny.
Thanks. A lot of fun.
And I know you had fun, too.
Well, I had a lot of fun. I had a silly haircut and a fun character to play, and I had a blast with it. And we're actually remounting it at Theater on the Lake next summer.
Oh, great.
In August of 2009.
Great.
So it'll be a lot of fun to bring it back again.
Well, great. Now, tell us about Autumn Garden. A lot of people know Lillian Hellman's work, mm-hmm. but a lot of people have also called this her masterpiece.
I certainly would agree with that. I think this is a play, I think, that is probably, in my opinion, is her most mature and most personal and most introspective play that she had written. And I think she's certainly got a canon of work that's phenomenal. And a lot of stories, Little Foxes, Another Part of the Forest, Days to Come, where you've got some really powerful characters and some really strong and fun characters for actors to play, some really dynamic relationships and situations and struggles. And Autumn Garden is a little bit different than that. The Autumn Garden is a play that's really about characters reaching a point in their lives when they want to look around and take stock of the choices that they've made and the relationships that they've forged and kind of see where they're at as they start to get older and more mature.
Well, that's a universal theme. Yeah,
and it's one that speaks really strongly to that process of self-examination and discovery that, you know, I think everyone hits at different points in their lives, and it's a very detailed collection of stories that overlap and intertwine and weave together and create this just beautiful, mature work of just real emotional truth and depth.
It's a real ensemble piece, right?
Yes.
You have 12 characters in the play, 12-member cast?
12 characters, and all of them are really fascinating characters. All of them have really detailed and specific stories and, you know, backstories and relationships. And they really do have, there are, I think, maybe four or five separate storylines that weave in and out throughout the piece. And so, it's very much an ensemble piece, and it's a lot of fun working with this ensemble, bringing it together.
I know it's a 1951 play. Mm-hmm. What year is it set in?
It's set in 1949.
Okay.
So right about that same time. And it's set on the coast of the Gulf of Mexico, about an hour outside of New Orleans, is what the script says. We're looking at somewhere around Biloxi, Mississippi, as being the general location of it. And so we're right after World War II, a lot of characters who have been through the Great Depression and been through one or both of the world wars and are at interesting places in their lives in terms of where they've been and what they've seen and where they want to go from here.
Now, does it have her standard children? She always found a way to put some children in a play. I don't know why, but she did.
Yeah, she does. And you know, certainly in the children's hour, you've got some wonderful young characters there. In Little Foxes, is it Alexandra and Leo? I think, mm-hmm. are the young couple their potential marriage is a part of that story. Here you get a couple of really interesting and wonderful young characters. There's a young girl who's been imported from France, where she's the niece of one of the main characters in the story, and she was born in France, in German-occupied France, and was brought here to live with her aunt about 5 years before the action of the play starts. She's 17, I think, 18 years old. And she is... The plans are there at the beginning of the play for her to get married to one of the other young characters, a young man who's about 21 or so, struggling to find his place in the social structure and his wealthy family, and trying to figure out how to make his life work within the confines of what his family is and what he should be. And so the story of their planned marriage becomes one of the major storylines here. And they're wonderful young characters. And I think it is interesting that she does that a lot with a lot of her plays.
Yeah. And I'm surprised that this play has not been produced more often.
Yeah.
Why do you think that is?
I think... I can't say that I know for sure. I think it's a very complex play. It's a very challenging play. It is one of the... I keep talking about it as one of the thickest scripts that I've ever worked with. Every phrase has a clue in it about somebody's history or somebody's relationship with somebody else. And I found us during the rehearsal process, it felt like we could talk for hours about a single phrase and what it meant to the characters and what it meant to the stories. So I think in that sense, it is a challenging piece, and it's a lot of fun to work with, but I can see it as being intimidating. It is a traditional three-act structure, three-hour-long production, and I think that's something that intimidates a lot of theater companies in terms of trying to market that and trying to, you know, make sure that an audience has the capacity and the attention span to be able to do, to to do a three-hour play.
Well, it helps that August Osage County was for 3 hours, so we're back to that.
I know there is a sense of that, actually. With August Osage County, I was talking to an usher about that this morning, and also with the Brothers Karamazov being a three-and-a-half-hour-long play.
Correct, yes,
Elevator Repair Service from New York is in town right now producing Gats, which is a full script, full-text adaptation of The Great Gatsby.
Yeah.
Comes in at 6 hours. So I think that I'm hoping and think that there is a movement back towards longer productions.
If the story is strong and it's well-directed and well-acted, which is what you guys have a history of doing.
Yes. Well, thank you for that. I think absolutely. There are stories that need 3 hours to be told and told well. And I think it's great that audiences are showing that they have, you know, the stamina to be able to be a part of stories that need that time and that work that way.
Well, I think, again, that people want big stories.
Yes.
Yeah, and we, you know, we all go to these 90-minute and 80-minute shows, and some are great, but there's nights you just want to go and sink your teeth in there and escape from the world and go into someone else's world for an evening.
Yes. Yes, and this is a very, very detailed world to get lost in for 3 hours, and it's a great journey.
So tell us what your approach was to this show, because a lot of directors have a vision, and some of I've talked to have told me it's all about casting and then just get out of the way. What's your approach to a show like this?
I think my approach generally starts with the playwright, and I think that's why, you know, why I've been a part of Eclipse for 10 years now, is because I see my role very much as being that of making sure that the story that the playwright's telling is being told. And so my approach was to spend a lot of time with the script and a lot of time with Lillian Hellman and really come at it from the approach of wanting to honor the story that she had told. I do think that a lot of this production specifically was about the casting, and I think there are a lot of directors who say that 90-95% of your work as a director is casting the show right, and once you've done that, you really can step out of the way and let them work and do the things that they need to do. And casting was a long and difficult process, difficult because we had a lot of interesting choices to look at, people who were fantastic, who would take roles in different ways, and so we needed to find a combination of 12 people that really served the story that we wanted to make sure that we were telling.
Now, do you, your ensemble people, your ensemble members, did they get first crack at it?
For the most part, And we do have a couple, we have two ensemble members who are acting in this production. We also have some great guest artists and some people that are working with us throughout this season. So this was definitely a show where we had some people in mind within the ensemble that we knew we wanted to use as some of these roles.
That's great. But you have plenty of outside people.
Yes.
People always say, actors always wonder, they say, well, those roles, all, you know, you got to be part of that group.
I think certainly different companies approach it from different ways and have, you know, a different kind of idea of how they want to treat ensemble casting. I think we have an ensemble that's made up of people who are actors and directors and designers and producers, and so a lot of us choose to be involved with different productions in different ways. And I think also because our approach is so committed to the playwright, there are times when I think we as artists recognize that, you know, we're not the best actor for the person, for the character, the way the playwright wants that story to be told. And so there's always a balance of trying to make sure that we're honoring our own artistic desires and also honoring the artistic integrity of the play.
Well,
so I think there's some of both.
Well, that's got to be...
It's an interesting balance.
Yeah,
to try
I was going to say,
reach.
Yeah. Because, like, you're the artistic director. You're directing this show. Last show, you were an actor in.
Yes. Yes, and, you know, I think, and the show before that, I designed the lights.
That's right, you did,
So it's, and so I think it was one of the things that I really was attracted to Eclipse about from the very beginning, was that this was a place where I could do that, where other people wanted to do that, and figure out what the best way that they could work on each individual production would be.
Because, you know, that's rare among theater groups. Usually the artistic director, he may star in a role, or he may direct a show. But to do the lights,
right.
or to have a
a relatively smaller role in her show. That usually doesn't happen.
Right. I think it is different. And I think it is because of the approach that I have and the approach that Eclipse has that I think about it differently.
Well, that's great. Now, how do you select the plays? Do you select them, or does the ensemble, or how does that work?
The ensemble does. I think I'm one of the most powerless artistic directors in town, but in a very good way. The ensemble really has a stake in what we choose as our season each year, and it's a pretty specific process. We have a four-person artistic committee that's made up of four ensemble members that start off the process of choosing a playwright with a long list of playwrights that's recommended, and they read a lot, and they ultimately bring the plays and the playwrights that were that they want the full ensemble to consider to the full ensemble. Everybody reads them. We read some of them out loud. We talk about them. We argue about them, and at the end we vote. And so I see my role as the artistic director really as guiding that process.
Are you one of the four?
I'm actually a fifth. I actually sit on the committee as the artistic director, so there are four plus me. So yes, I think my role as the artistic director is very much to make sure that process is moving in a way that matches who we are as artists and who we want to be as an ensemble. But ultimately, it's not my decision, and I think we're the better for it because I think all of us feel some ownership over the decision that we make. Mm-hmm. All of us feel like we understand the decision that we made. And even for those of us who disagree, we recognize that it's a decision that's come to by the collection, by the collective as a whole.
Well, that's generally got to produce good results. When you got a group like that.
The two results that it's produced, which I think are really worth noting, are one that I feel like in the 10 years that I've been with Eclipse, it's very rare that we have actually put up a weak script because we spend so much time as a group.
Well, that's true. You're
looking at and analyzing each individual show.
That's true. That's what I've seen. Yeah, I've never seen you guys with a weak script. Yeah.
We don't have those moments where I as an artistic director pick a show because I like it and it turns out it's not such a good script. We've got a vetting process that stops that from happening. The other thing that's great is that we've got, I think, seven or eight people who joined Eclipse Theatre Company in 1999 and are still members now. And for a non-equity company that really doesn't pay ourselves very much, that's a pretty rare thing. And I think that has a lot to do with the sense of artistic ownership that comes from the way that we choose our season and choose our playwrights and go through that whole process.
Yeah. You're committed, you're ensemble members stay with you for a long time, and the process of selecting the plays, because I think that's so important, because you guys have a reputation where Eclipse has a show and they go, what's the show? Don't worry about it. It'll be good.
Oh, well, I thank you very much for that. It is a process that I think all of us are committed to, and all of us are really committed to the success of how this process has really worked for us over the last 10 years. And we're actually right now in the beginning stages of selecting our featured playwright for 2010. We just started about 2 or 3 months ago. The artistic committee started meeting. We have a list right now of, I think, 14 playwrights that we're considering for the 2010 featured playwrights. And I have a stack of library books on my desk at home that is huge. And so we're going through that process now of reading, and we're meeting about once a month to just kind of share our thoughts on those playwrights.
Give us some of the criteria of the people. Is it a balance between successful, hot, well-known playwrights,
sure,
or those that haven't been beaten to death, by all
sure
the other theater groups, or what?
The only official criteria that we have, the only criteria that we've written down for ourselves and know that it has to be consistent, is that a featured playwright has to have written at least three plays.
Okay.
And that is it. That is our only criteria. However, each time we go through the process, we find ourselves looking at a number of different considerations that seem to pop up every year. One of them is the debate between, do we want to be doing successful, well-known playwrights, or do we want to be doing up-and-coming, unproven, but very strong and talented playwrights? And I feel like we've kind of done a little bit of each over the last 10 years and kind of fall into a different place of where we are artistically each year. I think there's a lot of merits to both. I think we've had a great opportunity to look at Tennessee Williams and look at some of the plays that are not produced very often. In 99, we did Confessional suddenly last summer and Eccentricities of a Nightingale. So a featured Tennessee Williams season without Streetcar and without Cat on a Hot Tin Roof and without, you know.
Yeah,
so, and I
great idea.
That was a really interesting artistic exploration for us. And so that's something that comes up each year. You know, I think Arthur Miller comes up frequently for us. And, you know, and Arthur Miller has this phenomenal body of work outside of the plays that he's really well known for and that get produced all the time. And so that's a fun exploration. Last year, we looked at the works of Pearl Clegg. She was our featured playwright for the year. She's an African-American novelist and playwright who a lot of us were not familiar with before we started that process, who's had some very successful productions of the, I think, five plays that she's written, six.
Okay.
And so it was a playwright that a lot of us introduced ourselves to as artists and a lot of us introduced audiences to, and that was a phenomenal process. And she was in contact with us throughout the year and came in to do a post-show discussion and a symposium with us, and having that kind of energy from a playwright was fantastic.
Well, you've had other playwrights who are still alive, obviously.
Yes.
Yeah. Who else has come to see them?
Rebecca Gilman was wonderfully involved all throughout our 2006 season. She lives in the area, so she was able to be involved with all three productions. She was actually sitting in on auditions for some of the productions. She was sitting in on rehearsals. She was doing some rewrites and giving us some new dialogue to work with. She was there for previews. She was just wonderful. Keith Radin, back in 2004, reworked a script of his Big Time with a workshop with us, and was involved throughout that season. John Guare was wonderfully supportive.
Did he come in to see you?
He actually came in to visit us right at the time that we announced that our next season was going to feature John Guare. He was in town because The Goodman was producing the musical that he was working on that I can't remember the name of right now. But he was in town, and he actually came to see a Romulus Linney production of ours, and then spent some time with us and chatting about our plans for next season. Romulus Linney was also another playwright who was very involved with us. He came and did a symposium and question and answer at the Chicago Cultural Center with us back in 2001, I'm sorry. And actually, those are our five playwrights that we're going to be featuring next year as part of our second half of our celebration series. And so we're looking towards a number of opportunities to hopefully have some of them, or maybe even all of them, back in town to be part of the celebration for next year.
That would be quite an honor, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I have this dream of being able to get all five of them here at the same time so that we can have a big party and get some great group shots.
Well, let me know, and we'll do something with this podcast.
Absolutely.
I don't know how I'd get five or six on, but we'll figure out a way.
Yeah.
that would be great, because I would like to definitely get these people on. Like, I had the luxury of doing Horton Foote, 96 years old, and that was great. But now, for you guys being a professional theater company but a non-equity company, to do the level of quality theater that you guys do is just amazing.
Thank you.
And then you're having these world-class playwrights come and honor your work, and you know, obviously they like what they're doing, because a lot of these guys, they could pull the rights if they...
Sure. Yeah, thank you again. I think, and we have a number of times over the last few years talked about the possibility of becoming an equity company. Eclipse actually was an equity company in its very first incarnation back in the early 90s, in 92 through 95, I think.
Okay. And then you have some equity members too, right?
We have one current ensemble member who's equity, and so we've looked at that possibility a couple of times, and really one of the things that I think has kept us in the position of being a non-equity company is the quality of talent that's available in the city when you're looking for actors that are non-equity. I think for any ages, for any types, we've got actors who are just amazingly talented.
That's true.
Who are looking for, you know, good productions in non-equity houses to be able to work with, and that's been just great for us.
Yeah, and your work absolutely has not suffered from that.
Thank you.
And a lot of people, one of the considerations too is economics.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, the cost.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And I think, I mean, you know, going equity as a company brings a lot of advantages. It also certainly brings a lot of added cost, and it's something that would be a challenge. In terms of budget, in terms of administrative kinds of needs, and so it's a big jump for a theater company to look at that possibility.
Yeah. And a lot of people don't realize that they wonder about the price of tickets, but they don't realize what costs really go into it.
Right.
You know, and that the ticket price doesn't really cover it, does it?
Not even close. No. And I mean, you know, certainly, and I'm sure you've heard this from other people, and what's been, you know, where the economy is at right now, and where it seems like things are going in the last couple of months. We, like a lot of theater companies, rely on support from private donations, from public government foundations, from individual donors. And so, you know, all of that has gotten more and more difficult over the last few months. And
well,
so,
I think there's some hope going to be in the White House.
Yeah.
Coming
I think so. I think there's hopefully a different energy in that sort of, you know, and I think that a lot of arts organizations really need it. I think a lot of arts organizations need a better economic climate to be able to get the kind of support they need.
Amen. Because, you know, we spend so much money. You know, we're bailing out big corporations. Mm-hmm. All the money we spend on wars, we can afford to keep the arts going. I think it's essential.
Yeah,
that we do that.
Yeah,
but okay. Now, tell us about some more of your background.
Okay,
you've been with the company, and your photo is going to be on the site. People listening are going to see. They're going to wonder, how's this young guy? Because you look young. I've never asked anyone their age, but you look like a young guy who's like a college kid. But you've been at this for a long time. You've been 10 years with it. So
10 years. 10 years with Eclipse. Yeah. I won't tell you how old I am,
no.
But I'll give you enough clues that you can probably do the math.
Okay.
I started working with Eclipse at the end of their 1998 season, which was the first one playwright, one season season that they did, with featuring Jean Cocteau.
Mm-hmm.
And I designed the lights for The Infernal Machine by Jean Cocteau, which was also the last show at the old Eclipse Theater space in Bucktown. And I had just graduated from college about a year and a half before that. And I had worked with a couple of different companies and a couple of companies that were in the process of really finding their feet and finding themselves, and tried to get a couple of work with a couple of companies to really get started. And I found that to be a really frustrating process. There are a lot of companies that, or at least the companies that I was with, were falling prey to politics and personal differences, and the difficulty of really maintaining the energy that you need to be able to keep producing shows. And I did Lights with Eclipse, and The Infernal Machine, the old theater space in Bucktown, burnt down the opening weekend of the show.
That's not a good omen.
No. And the, you know, the set was burnt, the costumes were burnt, the props were burnt, the building was, you know, just devastated. And the show was up again and running the next weekend at the Chicago Cultural Center.
Wow.
With all new costumes, all new lights, all new set, all new everything. And everybody from Eclipse, everybody from the cast, everybody from the crew, everybody spent that 4 days, 5 days pitching in and making sure that the this show could be back up again without missing a beat.
I wasn't aware and of that. So that's remarkable. Yeah.
And so I looked around and I said, this is the kind of, you know, company that I want to be a part of, and the kind of energy that I feel like is going to work. And then married into that was the idea that this is a company that has an approach that's really focused on the playwright and on the storyteller. And that was something that I was really interested in artistically. So I've been with them. I joined the company formally the next season after acting in Confessional by Tennessee Williams. And I think that I've worked in some capacity on every production we've done since.
And you, how long have you been artistic director?
This is the end of my first season as the artistic director. I took over the position at the beginning of this season.
So you're an actor, lighting guy,
yeah.
director, artistic yeah. director.
I designed props once.
Props?
I think
okay.
that might have been a mistake. it turns out it's a lot harder than it looks. I think right now I'm really focused on directing and acting and lighting design, if that can be called a focus. but I really like having the opportunity to do all three and really work with the kinds of groups of artists we put together here.
Well, let's go in a few minutes we have left. Let's go into the rest of your season.
Sure.
Because, I mean, the Autumn Garden, and folks, that opens on November 15th.
Yes.
And when you the folks you're hearing with this, you can go to and look at the reviews on our Talk Theater
yes,
in Chicago.
Yes, because it's open by now.
Yeah, it'll be open, and the reviews will be up. And I'm just anticipating, with the past track record, I think it's going to be a pretty good show.
Well, don't jinx me now, but
I'm
thanks.
I'm not. You go by track record. Like I said, you're right. You guys are on that list of theaters that that the theater community knows. When you're doing a show, they book it, and then they look and see what the show is.
Thanks.
And you're on that. And you know some of the timeline, life, food, writers, theater. You know, you guys are in that upper level of where the quality is so strong.
Well, thank you. Yeah.
So what do you got coming up after this for us?
This runs through December 21st.
Okay. What days you run? At the Greenhouse Theater?
At the Greenhouse Theater.
Which is the old Victory Gardens on Lincoln Avenue.
Exactly.
Yeah.
We're running on Thursdays and Fridays at 8 o'clock. Saturdays, we've got two shows, 3 o'clock and 8 o'clock. And then Sundays, we've got 3 o'clock matinees. There's no show on Thanksgiving Day, but aside from that, that's the schedule. And we do also actually just mention, we do post-show discussions, talkbacks with the cast and crew after our Sunday matinee shows. And those are fascinating, and I'm really looking forward to those with a script that's this rich and this detailed. I think there are going to be a lot of really fun things to talk about with the audience, so I'm really looking forward to that.
And I like the fact that you're doing Saturday matinees.
Yeah.
Are those working out for you?
We do those off and on, and we do those in the fall because we're running into the some of the holidays where we can't have performances. But they've been well attended. They've been a lot of fun for us. I think it's fun to be able to do two shows in one day. I'm definitely looking forward to them for that. And I think that we'll have a good run with that this.
Okay.
But you were asking about the the next show coming
right.
up. Our 2009 season is actually the continuation of the Celebration series,
okay.
part two. So
right.
The Autumn Garden is the end of part one, and in part two we're looking at our more contemporary playwrights, let's say. So we're starting off in March with Blue Surge by Rebecca Gilman.
Okay.
Which opens March 19th. All of these are at the Greenhouse Theater. And after Blue Surge, we're going back to Pearl Clegg with a new play of hers, A Song for Coretta, which was written actually while we were featuring her. She wrote it, and it was produced at Spelman College in Atlanta for the first time. And so we'll be doing the Midwest premiere of that. It's a beautiful story about five African-American women who are waiting in line outside the Ebenezer Church to see the body of Coretta Scott King as she's lying in state.
Wow.
And it's just the five of them kind of talking about their own experiences and their relationship to Coretta Scott King and why they feel like they need to be here waiting in the rain to see her body and say goodbye to her. And it's a beautiful story and one that I'm really looking forward to playing with. After that is 6 Degrees of Separation by John Guare. That'll be in July and August of next year. and then finishing off the season with Democracy by Romulus Linney, which is a wonderful story about the presidency of Ulysses S. Grant, and very much about a heated debate about religion and politics that rides through the whole show, and it's also a laugh-out-loud comedy. So I think that'll be a lot of fun, and certainly some fun political and social issues to explore.
So which ones are you directing any of these?
I am not. I am not directing.
Are you going to act in any of them?
I am acting in Blue Surge in the spring. And past that, I actually don't know as of yet what I'll be doing. I think I'm going to design the lights for a song for Coretta. But past that, I don't know for sure what I'm going to be doing. We're just starting to figure out all the details of those shows now. But it's a good season. It's one
yes,
I'm really looking forward
yeah,
to.
Yeah, this is.
And it's also our first four-show season that we've done since the very, very early days of Eclipse. And so it's an ambitious season. It's one that we really wanted to tell. We are also going to be doing some extended Playwright Scholar Series events and readings with Keith Radin, who's our fifth featured playwright that we'll be exploring through next season. So there will be some things kind of revisiting our journey through his works as well. So it's an ambitious season. It's a fun season. I'm hoping that some or all of these playwrights will be able to be actively involved with us through the season. And then after that, we'll be back to the traditional format for us of one playwright, one season in 2010. And like I said earlier, we're just starting the process now of deciding who that playwright's going to be.
Well, based on the ones you've done in the past, I'm sure you'll come up with somebody. You're not at a point where you're going to repeat anybody.
No. We haven't. Yeah. I would say that possibility could always be on the table, but I haven't really heard any desire to do that. I think the Celebration series gives us the opportunity to be able to go back and revisit some of these people that we really, really loved and wanted the chance to do one more show of theirs. And I think, you know, another 10 years down the road, we'll probably do the second Celebration series so that we can do it again.
Okay. Any plans on ever doing a musical?
Not off the table. It's something that comes up every once in a while as we're talking about it, and we do look at some. In fact, we've got one person right now that we're looking at for 2010 who has a couple of musical.
Well,
works.
I asked that question to PJ Powers, and he said, "I don't think so." Then Fiorillo happened.
Sometimes they happen even if you're not thinking about it.
Yeah, so it's not out of the question for you guys.
No, I think it depends on, you know, where we are as an ensemble and what we're interested in artistically, and I think that's something that could at some point down the road be something that we're interested in, but no definite plans right now.
Okay. But that good answer, and I kind of hope you guys would do it, because you know it's funny, people would think musicals are tough to do and they're different.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But it's funny when dramatic theater companies do them, they usually do a really great job.
Yeah, and there have been some real interesting ones in the last couple of years of some, you know, more traditionally drama focused companies doing musicals and doing them very well from what I've seen. So it could be something interesting to play with down the road.
Well, great. This has been great. And folks, make sure you get out to see Autumn Garden, because groups like Eclipse Theater are the type that Chicago Theater is really is. You guys are one of the anchor companies in Chicago theater. And in times that are tough, we need to support theater.
Absolutely.
And thank God you're offering such a good show. So it's not just you're going to support, you're going to see some top-notch
entertainment. Absolutely.
So thank you so much. And folks, remember, go see a play this week.
Hello, Chicago, and welcome to the Talk Theater in Chicago News Podcast. I'm your host, Dustin Moat, bringing you the theater news for the week of November 17th, 2008. Tickets for the long-awaited production of Mary Poppins went on sale to the public last Friday. Telephone, online, and other box office outlets now have tickets available to the North American National Tour, opening at Chicago's Cadillac Palace Theater on March 11th. Mary Poppins keeps the original Broadway stars Ashley Brown and Gavin Lee, along with the entire original creative team. It is based on the classic 1964 Walt Disney film and is a co-production by Disney and Cameron Mackintosh. It opened on Broadway 2 years ago on November 16, 2006, where it was consistently among the top-grossing shows on Broadway. Simultaneously, the show's popularity grows around the world. Following a successful 3-year run at London's West End, it's currently showing in Edinburgh and soon in Manchester and Cardiff. Mary Poppins will later make its Australian debut in Sydney next October. And to get tickets for Mary Poppins here in Chicago, follow the links on Talk Theater in Chicago's news section. The holidays are fast approaching and Chicago theaters are starting up their holiday shows. Joe Stead has a new article detailing the festive productions here in town and the ones that will be coming our way soon. From the Goodman Theater's adaptation of A Christmas Carol, the Charles Dickens classic, to the Chicago original musical The Christmas Schooner. It's one of the biggest successes in Bailiwick's history, and this year it'll be the last time it's performed on the Bailiwick stage. Theater Wit revives The Santaland Diaries, and Victory Gardens brings back The Snow Queen. Click on over to Theater in Chicago News for Joe Stead's Holiday Roundup. The cast of August Osage County is back in Chicago this week. They are rehearsing at Steppenwolf for their November 26th opening in London's National Theater. But not only is the AOC hitting the global stage, the Tribune is reporting that Harvey Weinstein of the Weinstein Group has signed on to produce a film version of the show that may in fact debut in 2011. August Osage County was written by Steppenwolf Ensemble member Tracy Letts and, as you may recall, won the 2008 Tony for Best Play. This is all very, very exciting news, and you know what podcast to stay tuned to for more information. Thank you for listening to the Talk Theater in Chicago News podcast. Remember, you can find us here every Monday with more news ready for you to enjoy. So, until next Monday, that is the theater news from Talk Theater in Chicago, and I'm your host, Dustin Moat. Thank you for listening to the Talk Theater in Chicago podcast. I would like to thank Nathaniel Swift for giving us the honor of interviewing him this week. I would also like to thank Tom Williams and Mark Meyer. Without them, this podcast would not be possible. And also, I would like to thank you, our listening audience. Remember, we will be here every Monday with a new episode ready for your listening pleasure. So, until next Monday, I'm your host, Dustin Moat, reminding you, Chicago, to keep talking theater.